with some specific commutation relations. Where the modes with positive n lower the energy, and the modes with negative n raise the energy. Now, if you remember from a harmonic oscillator, so you want to define a Fock space or state, the Hilbert space. So you have a vacuum, in this case, some vacuum with momentum p for the momentum or the central mass. And then you act on this vacuum with your oscillators to get new states. I want to have you want to also be able to do inner products. So this vacuum represents a vacuum in the past. We want to also describe the states in the future. So we can define both Brass and Ketz. And as in the harmonic oscillator, the construct, the creation modes build up from the vacuum in the past. The destruction modes build up from the vacuum in the future. So just to state it clearly, this state is killed by all the A's with positive n. And this one is killed by all the states with negative n, by all the operators with negative n. So these relations allow us to compute the inner product of any state, starting from the inner product of the vacuum. So we can define something like p prime to be delta of p minus p prime. These are delta function normalizable modes. And then you can compute inner products. For example, suppose I want to compute the inner product of P with A minus 1 acting on P prime. Well, A minus 1 kills this guy, so I get 0. Or I can try to compute P A1 with A minus 1 P prime. Now I can use my commutation relation to switch this around. After I switch them, this one kills this, and this one kills this. So all I have left is what's left, the commutator itself. So I get back delta of p minus p prime. Well, this was 1, so. And you can just repeat this iteratively. It's a fun exercise to, for example, implement this in Mathematica and recursively computing the products between states. Now it's very easy for the harmonics, for the free boson. Now you can apply the same principle to the Virasoro mode. So now we gave an explicit expression for the Virasoro modes here in terms of the bosonic oscillators. So this formula allows you to act on the Virasoro modes on this Fock space precisely in the same way as you did here. So you just put this sequence of oscillators in front of your state. Now, because of the normal ordering, the destruction operators are put to the right, the construction are put to the left. So most of the terms in this sum give you zero when they're acting on a state in this Fock space. So for example, suppose I want to compute L1 on the vacuum. This will give me zero, but clearly because it's time to lower the energy. But from the explicit expression, we can see it because there is always some positive A in this sum that is to the right and kills my vacuum. On the other hand, if I want to compute L minus 1 on the vacuum, I'm going to get two terms in here, A0 and A. Sorry, there is notation. I think I forgot to mention. I'll just define A0 to be the same as B. Let me make sure that normalization is correct. Yes. This is a convenient notation. Because if you remember the current plus sign, and here is a minus sign. Okay. So you see that it's natural to extend this sum to n equal to 0 by setting A0 equal to P. And I have done this as implicitly when I've done this formula. And I forgot to mention it, sorry. Okay, so here you get two terms, A0, A1, A minus 1, or A minus 1, A0. Normal order, they're the same. So I get something like P, A minus 1. I could compute L1 of L minus 1 of P. So in the expansion of L1, now I find a lot of things that kill this state. The only one that does not kill is the one that has an A1 here, because A1 can, while passing across minus 1, gives an extra contribution. And so I get something like P squared. Let me also compute L0 of P. P squared over 2. Now you can check this against the Virasoro algebra that we wrote down at the end of the lecture. So L1 commutator L minus 1 gives you 2 L0. So you can use the Virtual Algebra to compute this directly. You apply the commutator. Once you switch them around, L1 is going to kill P. You get true L0, which is P squared. So in general, if you are in a generic theory, not in a free boson, you can still study. You can take some vector in your Hilbert space. You can act on it with the Virasoro generators. You get what are called the descendants of that vector. And then you can compute the inner products between these descendants using the Virasoro algebra in terms of the inner products of the original vectors. But here we're working with free boson, so we'll just use the free boson description of the Fock space. And whenever we act with the Virasoro generator, we'll just expand it out in modes. Okay, so. And now this statement generalizes readily to the statement that the Ln on the vacuum gives you zero if n is positive. And similarly, Ln gives you zero if n is negative. Okay. So for now, I'm going to borrow for next week the statement that the physical states of the string are killed by the positive modes of L. So, again, if you remember QED, this is more or less what you did with the concert current of QED when you were imposing gauge fixing. I also need to decide what to do with L0. And here is where I'm going to put an inexplicable number. So this one is just something. So you might have thought, okay, maybe I should subtract, put in the, where did it go? Maybe I should have taken L0 minus C over 24. Instead, I'm going to take minus one. And that will, the full explanation will be next week. Today, we'll see that this minus one makes something very nice happen. In a similar way, I'm going to pick the dimensionality of my spacetime to be 26. With signature 25,1. Again. Today this is just an assumption, but we will see at the end that something nice does happen when the dimension is precisely 26. Okay, so these are going to be the physical states of my string theory. I'm going to take the oscillators of 26 free bosons with a Lorentz signature, build a Fock space, select inside this Fock space the states that are killed by the positive modes of L, and these are going to be the physical states. One final observation is that, of course, the dual of the physical states will be killed by Ln with n smaller than 0. And if you suppose that you have a physical state, or a state in general, which is of the form Ln of something else. For negative n. Then the inner product of this state with every physical state will be 0, because Ln kills the physical state. So this kind of state is something we call null state. The state is orthogonal to all the physical states. And so it should be just removed. So the space of strings that hyperspace of the free string. It's going to be the space of physical states. Modulo the space of null states. Again, this is precisely what you're seeing in QED. Mm-hmm. Could you repeat the, what are the null states? So the null states are states that are obtained from some other state by acting with negative modes of L.
But why would they be any different than the physical?
Well, some of the null states might also be physical. So null states which are not physical, I don't care about them anymore. Anyway, some of the null states might happen to be physical. And those I need to throw away, because I want my Hilbert space of states to be positive definite. Physical states are the ones that are annihilated by Ln and by L0 minus 1. So at the moment, these are just definitions, our starting point for the day. So let's try to see what these conditions concretely mean. So I need 26 of these bosons, so let me add some indices. I'm going to add some Lorentz indices to my oscillators. I'm gonna write the commutator. And as I said, I want Lorentz signature. So I'm going to put a Lorentz metric there. Now, this should make you worry right away. In the same way as in QED, a similar commutational relation for the modes of the gauge vector should have made you worry. Namely, if you compute the norm of states like A1, A-1, mu on the vacuum, instead of getting a 1 here, you're going to get the metric. That means that the oscillators in the space directions are fine, but oscillators in the time direction is creating a negative norm state. So it better be excluded by other our physical constraints or by the quotient of null states. So let's try to build some physical states. Let me start from the vacuum. When is the vacuum physical? Well, it's definitely killed by the positive modes of L. But it generally does not satisfy this constraint. It only satisfies it if P squared over 2 equal to 1, or P squared equal to 2. So the gauge fixing condition somehow is giving us a non-shell condition on the particles that come out of the string. So as I was mentioning in the beginning, when you quantize your string, every state in the Hilbert space of this string behaves like a particle at low energy. And this is telling you that these particular states behave like a pretty unpleasant type of particle, a tachyon. So this is a negative mass squared minus 2. Now, minus 2 watt. If you remember, there was a tension in front of the action of the string, which has dimension for units. So this is minus 2, whatever scale is attached to your string. So okay. So this is the main reason the bosonic string does not work. Bosonic string is a tachyon. This tachyon is eliminated in more refined constructions like superstring theory. We might be able to get to it towards the end of the course or not. Next. Now I wrote down these constraints. I had this bad habit of always forgetting about the anthelomorphic part of the equations. So I should have also told you that L bar N gives the physical state when bigger than zero and et cetera. So where L bar N gives us TSS, TS bar S bar contains the L bar N's. So, and in particular, I also want L bar 0 minus 1 on the physical states to be 0. Now, for the tachyon, this was automatic because L 0 of P squared of P is P squared over 2. P L 0 bar of P is also P squared over 2. It's not so automatic once you start acting with modes. So each of the holomorphic modes raises the eigenvector of L0. Every anti-holomorphic mode raises the eigenvector of L0 bar. So if I want to have the physical condition to hold for both L0 and L0 bar, I need to raise the level of holomorphic and anthelomorphic oscillators in the same way. That means, for example, I can consider A minus 1 mu, A minus 1 bar mu acting on the vacuum. And let me put some sort of, to denote a generic vector in this space, I can put some coefficient, some polarization in there. Now, what are the physical constraints? Now, this is all still killed by L2, L3, L4, L5, because they would try to lower the energy, lower the level below the vacuum. But the constraint that L1 kills this is non-trivial. When I act with L1 on this state, can use those relations. I get something like that. So I discovered that this state is physical only if its polarization is transverse to the momentum. And then I need a from L1 bar, I get a similar constraint on the other index. Okay. So this is the space of physical states. The ones that satisfy this constraint. Now, we better check that there are no null states in here, though. So how do I build this a null state of this form? I can start with something like this. an act with L1, L minus 1 on it. This gives me, let me put a new here, essentially P mu U nu A minus 1 mu A minus 1 bar. Which means the null states are states for which epsilon is proportional to the momentum. Now, finally, we need to impose that L0 minus 1 kills these states. So the L0 acting on the state is P square over 2 plus 1. That should be 1, which means that these states must have P square equal to 0. So now we're getting some massless particles with two indices, two Lorentz indices. Some constraint on being longitudinal, and some null states we want to throw away. Now, is any null state physical? If I contract with this P, I get two conditions. One, that U has to be orthogonal to P, but the other is that P squared should be zero. So, if I had, so that means that in this case, there actually are null states in between the physical states, which I need to subtract. If I had picked any other number here, that would not have been the case. My particles would not have been massless, and the null states would not have been physical. Now, this is much more exciting that I'm managing to convey. So what are these? This is telling you that the string has, among the modes, some massless modes, the modes that look like a massless particle, which Lorentz indices, and a gauge symmetry. Meaning, suppose that I try to build a field for these particles. The field is going to have two indices. It's going to be massless, roughly. And it's going to have a gauge symmetry. Now, this should remind you a lot of a graviton, okay? A mode of the, if you have if you look at the fluctuation of the metric, it's massless, and it has a gauge symmetry, has two Lorentz indices, and it has a gauge symmetry. I mean, what is a gauge symmetry? A gauge symmetry just means that your field, the space of two physical modes is not all excitations of the field, but you need to throw away some that are not physical. This is exactly what this means, what this is telling you. If you look at all the possible polarizations of this particle, some are not physical, you need to throw them away. Now, here there's a little bit more than a graviton, because this index and this index are not really related, they're contracted to different objects. So you can sort of split the space into three parts. You can take, an antisymmetric combination. You can take a symmetric traceless combination. Or you can take the trace. Okay. So once you break it down into Lorentz irreducible representation of the Lorentz group, we find a graviton, a funny two-form field called the Kalbramon field, and a scalar field, usually called the dilaton. So we found that the bosonic string has three massless fields, a graviton, a true form, and a scalar field. Now, we haven't introduced interaction yet, but Once you introduce interactions, because of low energy interactions behave just like the interactions of quantum field theory, you can use some very powerful theorems of quantum field theory. For example, there is a theorem that tells you that if you have a massless graviton, then the interactions can only take a very specific form. This graviton is a graviton. So it coupled to all other matter like a metric. So this shows you that this perturbation, string perturbation theory will be in particular the perturbation theory of some theory of gravity, coupled to other fields, to a very unpleasant tachyon, and to another pair, couple of strange massless fields, and to whatever other fields we'll find next in the spectrum. Now, as you can guess, as we increase the level, the mass squared is going up. So we started with mass squared minus 2, going to mass squared equal to 0. Every other state in the string spectrum is going to have mass squared 2, 4, 6. So at low energy is going to be just very massive. But let's try to see what appears, at least at the next level. Now, as you see here, the states in the next level would be built out of P with either A minus 1 squared or A minus 2, and A minus 1 bar squared and A minus 2 bar. And as you see, the constraints and the analysis of the constraints sort of proceeds on the left, on the holomorphic part and on the telomorphic part almost independently. So let me just focus on the holomorphic part, and then the holomorphic part will work in the same way. So we have four types of states. To be physical, they had to satisfy p squared equal to minus 2. And now writing down in full the physical constraints gets a little bit tedious. So we need to make sure that these states are killed by L1 and they're killed by L2. And I will mostly leave the algebraic exercise to you. Very roughly, so the L1 constraint is going to relate the longitudinal part of the a minus 1, a minus 1, with the longitudinal part of a minus 2. And the n minus 2 constrains the trace of this. So you roughly throw away some of the longitudinal, essentially these Virasoro constraints throw away the longitudinal parts of all these tensors. So they throw the parts that are parallel with indices that go in the direction of the momentum. If you look for null vectors, so things that are of the form L minus 1 on something, or L minus 2 on something, you should find something interesting, that for generic number of dimensions, there are essentially, there are few null vectors which are also physical. But for dimension 26, there are more null vectors. So 26 is kind of a special value, where some vectors in the spectrum are becoming null. If you put less than 26, those physical states have negative norm, and things are particularly bad. If you go bigger than 26, those physical states are there. They have positive norm. If you're at 20, exactly 26, they become null, and they're thrown away. So the critical string somehow has some very specific amount of physical states. Now, this is the only special feature of 26 that you see at this stage. Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, yes, there should be a bar. So if you keep going, in general, you'll find some towers of particles with mass square to n, and a lot of Lorentz indices. So string theory, in a sense, naively challenges the conventional wisdom that in quantum field theory, you cannot have renormalizable theories with or interacting theories even with high spin. So variants of the theorem that I mentioned about the graviton can also be used to prove that if you have a theory with a usual quantum field theory with fields which have a lot of Lorentz indices, they just cannot interact in a consistent way. They always end up being free. Somehow string theory managed to get around this constraint by having infinitely many fields. So there are a lot of, it has an infinite tower of fields, all of which by themselves will be pretty bad, but together they conspire to allow things like a finite, UV finite theory. So this, there have been a few papers recently by Maldacen and others that really show like how in a quantum field theory, if you try to solve the UV problems of gravity in a perturbative way, you always end up having to introduce these infinite towers of fields. Now, of course, there could be other ways to fix UV problems of gravity, which are not perturbative. There is no reason for which being UV finite at a perturbative level should be a necessary condition for a theory to make sense. But it shows you that if you want to go that route, then you need to use, you end up with something like string theory. Okay, so are there any questions? Mm-hmm.
So your physical states are in the kernel of Ln for n positive?
Yes.
And your null are in the image for n negative?
That's right.
Is there an operator such that the physical states are its kernel and the null states are its image?
So not yet. So this operator will appear once we do the gauge fixing properly. So when we do gauge fixing properly, we'll introduce something called ghosts, which are essentially just a bunch of other free fields, which are fermionic. This funny spin statistic properties. And then in terms of those ghosts and the Virasoro modes, you can indeed build an operator which annihilate the physical states and such that the null states are in the image of this operator. Indeed, because we have extra time, I think I will start talking about ghosts for the remaining 15 minutes. But first, let me show that all the questions about free string spectrum are.
Could you remind us why we have a tachyon v square equals 2?
Mm-hmm. So it follows from this constraint. And from the fact that L0 on that state is p square over 2.
Right.
Now, there are deeper reasons for which a tachyon is appearing. But this, they can only be seen at, if you start looking at one loop, at amplitudes of one loop, which I'm not sure we'll be able to get to. But I can at least, I can draw a picture though that might be useful or not. So, when you suppose it's doing a scattering amplitude in quantum field theory, say two particles going to two particles. Schematically, in a Phi-cube theory, the Feynman diagrams look like this. There are three types of Feynman diagrams. Last one, I'm pretty bad at drawing, but. Okay. Sort of S, T, and U channels. And in string theory, there is only one picture. You can take this same picture and sort of cut it like this. And you can see a string propagating, a closed string propagating like that. But that same picture, that same diagram can also be cut like this. And you can see a string going through in the T channel. You can cut it another way, which I'm not trying to draw, which shows a string going through in the U channel. So in a sense, in string theory, you only have one, you're summing, say, over the T channel with infinitely many states in between. And this manages to produce the same answer as if you had done it on the T channel with infinitely many states going through, or in the S channel with, on the U channel with infinitely many states going through. In order for this to happen, somehow, the properties of this infinite tower of states here end up constraining which states propagate like this. So the correspondent really mixes all the states together. Somehow this relation matches properties like the mass of the low-lying string states in one channel to how many states are there in propagating the other channel. And in the bosonic string, there are an infinitely many states all contribute to the positive sign, and they cause some divergences, and then divergences correspond to the sickness in the other channel of having a tachyon. In superstrings, you have a lot of bosons and fermions, and they start canceling each other in interesting ways and cure some of those divergences. And they cure them well enough that you can get along by only having massless particles in the other channel and no tachyons. Right. Similar reasonings, easier to do, involve loop amplitudes. When you look at a loop amplitude in quantum field theory, it looks like that. When you look at a loop amplitude in string theory, it looks like a torus, which you can cut like this to see a closed string going through. But you can also cut like this to see a closed string going the other direction. And again, there is a duality which relates the two sums. And this constraint, again, relates low-lying string modes on one side with the whole tower on the other side, and can be used to give a pretty clean understanding of why the tachyon appears. Okay. It's okay, keep going. I can keep answering questions for 10 minutes without.
So, I'm sure you have probably mentioned that, but I somehow missed it. The tachyon has a negative mass, mm-hmm. but then d squared is positive.
Yeah, I'm using a. I'm using a signature space. So the space is positive, which means that your typical tachyon mode has only space oscillations, the time oscillations.
Is there like a geometric reason why you would expect to get a representation of the Harris or algebra on your Hilbert space?
So the reason is that the theory is symmetric under conformal transformations, under transformations of the of your worksheet, which are holomorphic. So what is a holomorphic transformation? It means that I'm saying z to z plus some function of z, infinitesimally. So this can be implemented by a vector field. So on the ceiling there, we're talking about vector fields that look like e to the ns, d over ds. And then you can look at the Poisson bracket between two such vector fields. Just the bracket. These are not, this is the commutator. Yeah, sorry. And you see this acts on this, minus this acting on that, you get n minus m times e to the n plus ms. So you get the Virasoro algebra from here. Except the central term, of course. So,
geometrically, then somehow you're associating this e to the ns dds with ln.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yes.
So, I guess maybe to be more explicit about my question. So, this is some like concrete vector field. That
yes.
You can imagine on for S1 or some little neighborhood
mm-hmm.
S1 or something.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Have in terms of these creation and annihilation operators, if you picture that in terms of excitations
mm-hmm.
on the actual string,
yes.
How is it related to the? Is it sort of maybe it's obvious or something? How is it related to like the form of this vector?
Well, yes. So the excitation of the string is. So we brought down the expansion of the, so the modes have a very specific meaning in terms of these modes have a very specific meaning in terms of the excitation, the motion of the string. And if you act with this vector field on X, the way you would do in the most trivial possible way. So this act, you know, takes the derivative of x, multiplies by e to the ns. You will get precisely a commutation relation between the zeros or generators in these modes. So it's literally true that up to the central, up to quantum corrections, if you had some shape of the string in the past, you act with it on L. So this shape of the string was, you're just reparametrizing the shape of the string, redefining the coordinate on your circle by this vector field. Okay, so in preparation of tomorrow, are you familiar with the Grassmann integration? So, okay. So tomorrow I'm gonna try to give a self-contained description of how the BRST formalism works. So it looks complicated, but it's not that bad, and it has a lot of geometric meaning, but it's often difficult to extract it from the formulas that are written down. What you're doing is very intuitive and can be understood just in terms of finite dimensional integrals. So it's just that you have some space you want to integrate over, and this space is complicated, but it can be given a description as a quotient of an easy space. So there's some simple space with an action of a group. And for some reason, you need to do an integral over the quotient of the space by the group. I mean, you integral zero over the space of orbit of the group. But you want to try to convert it into an integral over the simpler space. For example, I don't know, perhaps you want to do an integral over the real line, of the positive real line. And so for some perverse reason, you want to think about the positive real line as the quotient of the plane under rotations. So if you take the plane and you divide it by rotations, if you identify points of the plane under rotations, you get a positive line. And suppose now somebody is asking you to do an integral over a positive line. For some reason, you want to write it as an integral over the plane. So if you have an integral over the plane, you have some function, maybe invariant under rotations. And then you're integrating with the standard measure over the plane. Now, this is naive. This is not going to give you the same answer as doing the integral straight on the positive real line, simply because of this factor of R. This factor of R is just telling you that these orbits are getting bigger and bigger as you move away from the origin. So, of course, if you want to reproduce this integral, here it is, you just integrate FR over R over the plane. In general, the idea is to do an integral here. You can do an integral here, but you better divide by the size of the orbits of your group action. Now, this is for a finite dimensional integral, it's pretty straightforward. But if you're doing a path integral, doing it properly might be tricky. Maybe just because your gauge group typically is an infinite dimensional group, the volume of the orbit is infinity. If you're not careful, and it's pretty hard to compute the volume of an infinite dimensional orbit. So the BRST formalism is essentially a way to do this automatically without having to think about it. essentially you pick a bunch of extra Grassmann variables, which morally speaking are the opposite of the group, in the sense that integrating over the Grassmann variables give you one over the size of the orbit. So in integrals, bosons and fermions can cancel out. And so to do an integral over, instead of dividing by the group, you multiply by these fermions, and they'll end up canceling out G for you. So you do an integral over M times some ghosts. And then the ghosts do for you the job of canceling against the G inside M to give you the integral over M over G. So, and the set, which set of ghosts to use, emerges pretty naturally just by staring at expressions like this. So that's what we're gonna do tomorrow. We're gonna write down this sort of expression, rewrite it in terms of some ghosts in the finite dimensional case, and then define the infinite dimensional problem as just the same problem with appropriate infinite dimensional ghosts. So these ghosts end up being new fields in your path integral. Okay.